All right, I think we left off on Hebrews 11:22 last week. We will pick it up in verse number 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child. What's a proper child according to the Old Testament? I mean, what's a proper child for killing, I guess, in the context of the book of Exodus? Does anybody remember? Just a healthy male, that's it. They were killing all the baby males, basically. So they saw he was a proper child. Basically, he came out with the right equipment. Therefore, they hid him for 3 months. And they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Well, kind of, but not really. I like, again, like how the Lord kind of glosses over a few things like he did with Sarah back in verse number 11, saying that she judged him faithful. Well, yeah, kind of, I guess you could say that, after she laughed. Same thing in verse number 23. They were not afraid of the king's commandment. Well, they kind of were because they hid the kid. But I guess they weren't, like, you know, afraid enough to the point where they, like, you know, tucktailed and ran from Egypt. But verse number 24, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He matured, basically. I think Moses leaves when he's 40 years old. So eventually he gets to the point in his 20s, I believe it was, where he did not want to be called Pharaoh's daughter anymore because he realized he was not an Egyptian. How did he know he wasn't an Egyptian? He didn't look like him. He was the wrong color. It's pretty simple. I mean, when, you know, everybody else is a little bit darker than you are, and you come out and you're a little bit lighter, and it's like, well, I don't think your dad's who everybody says it is, because you should be a lot darker than you actually are. So therefore, look at what it says in verse number 25. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Basically, the people of God, he chooses to be with the Jews. He wants to be with his own kind, to suffer affliction with the people of God. And that's pretty much going to be the choice of your life. You'll either suffer affliction or you'll enjoy the pleasure of sin, but for a season. I mean, you might ask yourself, you know, I know of Christians, I can think of Christians right now that they are enjoying the pleasure of sin. And it's not like, you know, they're not like, I don't know, drug addicts or anything like that. It's just like, you know, there are Christians that you're going to come across and you wonder why they're so successful in life and they have everything they want and they have all the money and all the toys. It's because the thing is that I've realized in life that God always gives you exactly what you want. If you want money, if you want, you know, the fame and the fortune and you want to, you know, basically be one of the big wigs, God will let you do that. But the problem is you're going to sacrifice your spiritual walk with Jesus Christ in order to do so. I mean, it's kind of like how, you know, the old saying is, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Well, how do you make it, you know, far in the business world? A lot of times you have to cheat to get there. You have to cut corners. You have to do things that are not becoming of a Christian. And here's the thing. You're 20 times, 30 times, 100 times better off to let the Lord promote you rather than you try to do it yourself and make all the money and try to, you know, climb the corporate ladder, if you will. You're going to run into a whole lot of issues because you're going to sacrifice not just your spiritual walk. You're going to have to sacrifice your family time with your wife, with your husband, with your kids. You're going to have to sacrifice things to get ahead in life when it comes to that. There's nothing wrong with having to work paycheck to paycheck. I mean, I think sometimes it's good for Christians to live paycheck to paycheck. I'm not saying always. I'm not saying you should be stupid with your money. But at the same time, you know, there is a thing where you have to learn to rely on God, whether you make good money, bad money, no money, or a lot of money. Because at the end of the day, God knows what's going to come down your path of life, what he's going to deal to you. Sometimes God gives you something that's more challenging than others and vice versa. But verse number 25, basically, Moses is left with this choice. Am I going to suffer affliction with the people of God, or am I going to be like next in line to Pharaoh? I mean, if you think about it, if Moses was Pharaoh's son, that makes him next in line. I mean, can you imagine? It's like, okay, do I want to suffer with, you know, people of lowly estate? Do I want to suffer with a bunch of slaves, or would I rather be the next king of basically the world? I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I don't know if I'm strong enough a person where like, I would say like, okay, you could either suffer with Christians or you could be the president of the United States. Because what? This is how we think. Well, you know, if I was president, I could really do a whole lot of good. No, you couldn't. You can't change a thing. You're not going to change the people of this country with one person over them. You can't be a dictator and try to change the whole world. It's not going to happen. Notice that the pleasures are for a season. The pleasure of sin is for but a season. It's a great street preaching verse, because the thing is, eventually your sin will find you out. Eventually the wages of sin will catch up to you. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth of the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. It's one or the other. It's, you know, what is everyone called? They call it karma nowadays. It's not karma. It's just, it's the law of God. If you're going to do wrong, you're going to get wrong. If you're going to do right, you're going to get right. Now, there are exceptions to that, because the thing is, you can't confuse the fact that the suffering of the Lord Jesus Christ and Paul, that pattern that is laid out in your New Testament is going to come to you as well. You're going to have to suffer through some things. You're going to have health problems. You're going to have money problems. You're going to have job problems. You're going to have mortgage problems. You're going to have problems with your kids, your problems with your parents. You're going to have problems with your in-laws and problems with neighbors and problems with dogs and problems with cats. And you're going to have problems with everything. Just get used to it, because that's life. But at the end of the day, you have to realize that going through the struggles and going through the challenges of life is well worth it, because the Bible talks about, but our light affliction, that's what you're going to go through. For the next 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, whatever the Lord gives you, you are going to have a light affliction. You say, how can you say it's going to be a light affliction? Well, because when you get to eternity, it's going to appear very, very small what you had to go through down here. God could give you cancer for 20 years, and it's a light affliction. Do I want to go through cancer? Nope. Do I want to have money problems? Nope. Do I want to have problems with kids? Do I want to have a prodigal kid? Do I want to lose a kid? Do I want to have to put up with parents with dementia? No, I don't want to deal with any of that. But you have to realize this. In order for you to grow, God has got to put you through things. Period. I mean, people are like, you know, you look at someone like Sam Gibb. Sam Gibb's been used of God for 40 plus years now. How is that? He's had neck pain the entire time, a broken neck. His whole spine's basically fused together, except his C3 and C4. I think the only two that are independent right now, but everything else is fused together. Well, he deals with pain every day, almost every moment of every day. So does his wife. Why do you think he's used of God? I mean, look at the Apostle Paul. What did the Apostle Paul have to go through? I mean, the guy was stoned. He was shipwrecked. He basically was killed, came back from the dead after he was stoned to death. He was whipped 195 times. I mean, what? You want to go through that? No, I don't, because I know how my flesh is. I'm a wimp. I'll admit it. I'm a wimp. I don't like pain. But in order for you to get close to God, that I might know Him, the power of His resurrection, you have to suffer. I don't like that. If I could change some things in the Bible, that's what I would change, you know, that we don't have to suffer. But that's what God's called you to do. If we suffer, we shall reign with Him. You're going to go through things. Now the question is, how are you going to get through those things? Well, there's got to be a greater purpose. The greater purpose, verse number 25, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. I heard this years ago. It's don't find a spouse with someone who you can try to enjoy your hobbies in life. You have to find someone and marry someone that you can learn to suffer with. Suffer together through things. Because that's what a marriage is. I mean, I look at my grandparents and what they went through for 66 years, losing a kid, my grandfather basically cutting his face off with a chainsaw, getting his finger almost ripped off with a pipe threader, going through prodigal kids, going through prodigal grandkids, going through issues at the church and money issues and everything under the sun. Well, what do they learn for 66 years? You have to learn to find someone to suffer with. That's a marriage. You have to learn to suffer through things with each other. And really, what I've seen is that the more that God can put you and your wife or you and your husband through, the more God can do with you. But you have to realize this, is that your aunt, like Terrence Calvin beat this into our heads when he was giving us marriage counseling. You're on the same team. Always. You're always on the same team. When you argue, you're on the same team. You're arguing with your teammate. When you hold a grudge, you're holding a grudge against your teammate. You're on the same team. And when you have victory, it's a team victory. And when you have a struggle, when you have defeat, it's a team defeat. I mean, you're going to suffer together. You're going to have victory together. That's how it works. Verse number 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Is that not true? Look at verse number 38. This is one of my favorite verses, verse number 38. Of whom the world was not worthy. Why is the world not worthy of the great heroes of the faith? Because they chose, verse number 26, that the reproach of Christ is way better. It's way greater. The greater riches. Where? Not down here. You're not going to be rich down here. You're going to suffer down here. But if you suffer down here, you're going to have greater riches on the other side. Greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Elon Musk has nothing on me. Bill Gates has nothing on me. The sheiks over in Saudi Arabia have nothing on me. You know why? Well, they got the riches down here in Egypt. But I don't really care about the riches in Egypt. I care about the riches on the other side. Do I have a crown that I'm going to lay down at Jesus Christ's feet? Do I have a mansion? Do I have a gold, silver, and precious stones? Do I have something to give back to my Savior? For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt. Egypt is the world. I mean, the greatest type of the world in your Bible is Egypt. When you see the word Egypt, you should just consider it. It's the world. God is never for Egypt. He's always against Egypt. Egypt has always in a bad connotation. That's why I like what we're talking about on Sunday mornings in Sunday school with manuscript evidence. If it comes out of Alexandria, which is in Egypt, you think God's going to be for that when every negative connotation is basically towards Egypt in the Bible? Yet, you're going to tell me that the best manuscripts come out of Egypt. You think God's going to do that? He's contradicting his word doing that. Verse number 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. Just like his parents up there in verse 23. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. That's faith. Have you ever seen him who is invisible? Sure. You see the hand of God all the time. I mean, can you look over the course of your life and see what God has done? Sure. That's the invisibleness of God. You look at what God has done with your kids, what God's done with your wife or your husband, and what God's done with your parents, and what God's done with your friends and your work, and how God has come through time and time again in prayer and in your personal life. Well, what is that? That is seeing him who is invisible. Verse 28, through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood. There's the type of Christ right there. Lest he that destroyed, talking about the death angel, that's Revelation 6:8. He that destroyed the death angel, Revelation 6:8. Lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. Verse 29, by faith they passed through the Red Sea. Okay, that's the Red Sea, it's not the Reed Sea. That's what a lot of Bible critics would like to say, is they say it's not the Red Sea, it's actually the Reed, R-E-E-D-C. They actually went through a marshy land with cattails, and that's how they made it through, as by dry land. No, it's not that. It's not the seat of reeds, it's the Red Sea. And it says that they passed by on dry land. It's not mud, but dry sand. I mean, if you think about this, right? If you were to cut open a sea. Let's say you go up to Lake Erie right now and you cut open Lake Erie and you split it apart so that way there's about a 30-foot path all the way through Lake Erie from here to Canada. What would you expect at the bottom of Lake Erie? That all the mud down there would be wet, right? And yet they walked on dry ground. I mean, it's like, not only is it like hard to comprehend that God could split the Red Sea, but also that when he split the Red Sea, they walked on dry ground. He also evaporated all the moisture out of the ground they walked on. That is a type of the great deep that is above, the Red Sea. We talked about that with the universe. You have the great gulf above, the great sea above, and the great sea below. Verse number 29, which the Egyptians assaying. Assaying just means attempting. So, of course, what do a lot of Bibles do? They remove that word assaying and they'll put something else in there. You don't need to do that. If there's an old English word that you don't understand, what's the best thing to do? Write the definition in your margin. Assaying is attempting. Which the Egyptians assaying to do were drowned. Verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. That's a type of the world's destruction. Jericho is a type of the world's destruction. And yet, there's one lady that ends up making it through the fall of Jericho, and that's Rahab. Rahab's a type of the tribulation saint. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. Now, what does the Bible say about days? One day with the Lord is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day over in the book of 1 Peter. So 7 days would be how long? So how long will earth's history be before the Lord destroys it? 7,000 years. So if you think about it, how long have we been here? Well, we've been here, the creation started 4,000 years before Christ, basically. You have, Solomon's right around, David into Solomon's right around 1000 BC. You have Christ at zero, and you've had 2,000 years since Christ. So right now, you're sitting on 6,000 years of human history. You're going to have the tribulation come up. That'll be 7 years. And after that, you have 1,000 years of Christ reigning on earth, and he's going to do what? By faith, the walls of Jericho's fell down. He's going to destroy the whole world after 7 days. Verse 31, by faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. You know Rahab is a harlot and she's in the line of Christ? Something to think about. You ever think about like the people that are in Jesus Christ like lineage? It's not the best of people. You got murderers. You got whores. You got bad people. Verse number 32. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon. Notice the different spellings we have here. What is Gideon in the Old Testament? G-I-D-E-O-N. Okay, so again, this is what's happening in verse 32 and so forth. You have Hebrew to English would be G-I-D-E-O-N. But when you go from Hebrew to Greek, and then Greek to English, it comes out differently. It's Gideon, G-E-D-E-O-N. And of Barak. Now, what is that in the Old Testament? That's Barak. Just kidding. It's spelled differently, though. It's got a C in it. And of Samson, and of Jephthah, and of David, also in Samuel, and of the prophets. Funny thing for you. Notice verse 32. Who's found in verse 32 that surprises you? That surprises most people. Because here's the thing. You have Samson in verse 32. What did Samson do?
Well,
he was a Nazirite. Killed a lion. Then he ate honey out of the dead lion. And they cut his hair, right, with Delilah and all that jazz. And of course, he's in the basement of the Philistines. And the last thing he does is he gets his strength back with his eyes plucked out. And he literally brings down the house and kills thousands of Philistines. He committed suicide. And yet he's mentioned as a great hero of the faith. Now, what does the Roman Catholic Church teach? If you commit suicide, you go straight to hell. Because it is a mortal sin. You cannot be forgiven once you do that. So there's a ton of people out there that they believe that my loved one or someone I knew in high school committed suicide, and therefore now they're in hell because they committed suicide. That's not the case, because right here you have Samson. And what did he do? He committed suicide. And he's mentioned as a great hero of the faith. You think he's in hell if God mentioned him as a great hero of the faith? I think not. I went to high school with a kid. My freshman year, his name was Immanuel Kant, and he's a little black kid, and he actually killed himself my freshman year. And people are like, oh, it's horrible. It's, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, and people start talking about, you know, well, you know, you can't, all the Catholics I went to high school with are all like, well, you know, if he committed suicide, he went straight to hell. But see, Emmanuel was in a Baptist church. He's in a black Baptist church up in Cleveland. Either Mount Carmel or Mount Zion or Mount Sinai, whichever one of the black Catholic churches that everybody goes to that I went to high school with. And he most likely was a saved kid and committed suicide. If that's the case, where's Emmanuel right now? He's in heaven. Now, here's the thing with suicide. Is it the right choice? No. Why is it not the right choice? Well, because you're cutting short the time that God has given you. Because if God didn't want to give you any more time, He would gladly take care of that for you. I mean, I tell people this all the time. The reason why, especially with old people, why you're still here, why you're still breathing, and that ticker in your chest is still ticking, is because God's got something for you to still to do. If God did not need you, He would just take you home. It's that simple. Notice in verse 32 who is not in the list. You got David, you got Samuel, you got the prophets. King Saul is not mentioned. Why is that? What happened to King Saul? Probably in hell. He did multiple things that were bad, but one of the worst things was the Lord gave the commandment to kill everybody and kill everything. And of course, you know, Samuel shows up and says, "What's this I hear? The bleeding of the sheeps." And Saul blamed the people, of course, and he didn't really confess to the sin. And besides that, then he ends up dealing there with the witch of Endor, and he's working with witchcraft and calls Samuel back up from the grave and yada, 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 all these things. Saul's in hell. So therefore, Saul's not in the list of great heroes of the faith. Verse 33, who, through faith, subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. There's Daniel. Verse 34, quenched the violence of fire. That's the three Hebrew children. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Escaped the edge of the sword. Out of weakness were made strong. There's Samson again. Waxed valiant in flight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. What's an alien? See, you got aliens in the Bible. What's an alien? We define it the same thing still in America, and it upsets a lot of people when you bring it up. Someone from another country. That's an alien. That's literally what the word alien means. Someone from another country. And yet, it's still in your King James Bible. This is why we have to update it, because it's very offensive to a lot of people. Verse number 35. Women received their dead, raised to life again. That's like the woman in Shunem with Elisha. And others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Write down for that, a better resurrection. Philippians 3:11. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, there's Stephen. They were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered around in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute. Destitute means out of money. Broke. Poor. Afflicted. Tormented. Verse number 38, there it is. Of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves in the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they, without us, should not be made perfect. Now, back in verse number 38, of whom the world was not worthy. What does that mean? God thinks that when someone has so great faith that the world is not worthy of that person's faith. Like who? Like Daniel, like Stephen, like Samson, Gideon, Jephthah, David, Samuel, the prophets. There's people that are going to even be in your life that you'll think of, you know, after they're dead and gone, of whom the world was not worthy. I mean, I think of Grandma D all the time when it comes to that. I mean, a woman who wholly followed God in everything she did. You know, when she used to answer the phone, you know, she used to say every time she answered the phone, "Good afternoon, Jesus saves. Good morning, Jesus saves." I mean, you talk about a woman that witnessed to literally everybody. I mean, you imagine, you pick up your phone, and like, no matter who calls, you always answer, you know, "Good evening, Jesus saves." Because she didn't care what people thought. I mean, like, you know, this whole thing of like, well, I don't want to, you know, ruffle any feathers. She did not care. She would ruffle your feathers. She would tell you you're going to hell. She did that to me when I was in Sunday school back in, you know, 96, that she told me I was going to hell and I need to be saved. It worked, man. But I think of that, it's like a woman who did everything she could to take care of her husband, to raise her kids, to be a Sunday school teacher for 40 years or something like that, of whom the world was not worthy. There's one right there, Grandma Dean. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us. What's the better thing? Well, back to Moses, esteeming the reproach of Christ's greater riches. The better thing is what's on the other side. The better thing is not down here. The better thing is when we finally get to heaven, we get the rest for all eternity, but we get this, we get the fellowship face to face with our Savior. That they, without us, should not be made perfect. All right, we will pick it up next week with chapter 12. Does anybody have any questions over anything we've covered so far?
Can you review the first 22 verses?
That's online, I think. Or at least it should be online.
Yeah, it is.